Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We have a special guest live in the studio with us, Deborah Granick, who co-wrote and directed the film Winter's Bone, which won the Grand Jury Prize for Dramatic Film at the 2010 Sundance Film at the festival, and also 4 Academy Award nominations. She's just flown in on a plane here. And Deborah, thanks for hustling over and joining us on WFPL today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And she will be speaking tonight. She'll headline Spalding University's Festival of Contemporary Writing. That's at 6:30 p.m. tonight at 824 South 4th Street, open to the public. And, well, Deborah, it's been a few years now since Winter's Bone comes out. And I was wondering if you could kind of reflect on what that means. Of course, the film, 4 Academy Award nominations. It was a big hit. What's it like now for you to begin to move on? And I'm sure you still reflect on the film constantly.
It is a process where every film that you do builds and contributes to something that you start to think about in the future. And I think I'm still very wowed by when a novel is a tightly written, compelling, well-plotted yarn that's been told, you know, especially about maybe aspects of American life that personally maybe I do not know about, you know, what that draw is, and that pleasure of discovering something like that and then being able to work on that. And so I think in the wake of a film that works, you know, of course, the hunger to find another story to tell is amped up.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people from Kentucky and from the Appalachian regions felt, you know, there's a certain similarities itself. For example, meth plays a big role in the film as well. What's it like for you to come to Louisville right now? And I know there's a tie here. Also, Jennifer Lawrence is from Louisville. She was in the film. It must be nice also coming to a place I know that has received the film really well.
Now, that is a treat. And I think, flying into any state that you don't go to very often, I think this must happen to so many Americans. You know, you're very aware that you've just really left what you know, and you're flying into a place and that has stories that you don't know about, has issues that you don't know about, and it's always a very charged feeling. You know, you wonder what's in the minds of the people that you're going to talk to at a conference, for example. What stories are they interested in?
Well, let's talk about that film for a second here. I was amazed when watching it again that it takes place in a sense where at times it feels like it doesn't leave within 3 square miles of that place. Nobody takes these fantastical journeys abroad. And it seemed that it was a film that had such an emphasis on place, of a very small place. Was that one of the major intents when you were sitting down to do this film?
I think the author of the novel, Daniel Woodrell, had done that so intensely because he does have an Ozarks identity, and he knows it's a region that has parameters, that has a boundary, that has a heritage that is completely still it's rich. I won't say completely intact, because that's not possible. You know, it's influenced by lots of outside things, but the fact is he wanted to say in pockets of this large continent there are heritages, there are customs, there are dialects, and you know, this state that we're in now, right here, right today, you know, is one of the states that is endowed with that level of richness.
And this brings up, I think, questions of adaptation. You had to work from a novel to produce this film, and I'm sure it's something you'll be asked about a lot tonight. What's that process like? It's one that filmmakers endeavor a lot of times to do, but for you, where does that process begin?
The adaptation process.
Yeah.
It has to go, then you have to actually find live humans, you know, you have to find life models. That's not an original phrase. You have to go to a place that is extremely similar to what Daniel described, and you have to find a girl who's the same age as the heroine in his book, and you have to find out what does she really wear, what does she really eat, when did she learn how to hunt, when did she learn that the adults around her were having a problem with a substance called meth. When did she learn X, Y, and Z? And you have to find out what her aunt knows, what her uncle knows in real life. And then you have to start the hard work of where can we set this? Instead of imitating your house or your cabin, what would it be like to actually film in a house that has that lived history? So you begin to try to find real environments and real families that will contribute and make this novel actually have real cloth, real voices,
Absolutely. And I'm amazed thinking of what that process and how much it would entail. Do most filmmakers go through that extent? Do they work that hard to find these real pockets? Because I was amazed to read that you shot in real houses. You weren't designing sets. You were on the ground floor of this project.
You know, I think when you say do most filmmakers, or I think there are so many strands of filmmakers, yeah, as there are, writers, and neorealism is a tradition that in the past has frequently try to invoke a certain level of authenticity by using real people.
And what does that mean, neorealist?
Neorealist is a term that refers to trying to depict the lives of everyday people and everyday quandaries, everyday pressures. You know, the famous ones came out after World War II in the European context, but there were some beautiful American ones as well. I mean, in some ways, like films like Grapes of Wrath are attempting to be neorealist. They are talking about really what happened to the lives of ordinary Americans in the Dust Bowl, in the Depression. Those are great examples of American neorealism. You know, a lot of American filmmakers are more used to looking at European models. But some of the most famous ones came out of the wake of World War II, and it was like, I'm a waiter in Rome. How am I going to actually clothe my children? My salary is this. You know, our neighborhood's been devastated. How am I actually going to live? It's the suspense that's inherent in how ordinary people are going to navigate their lives and actually be able to survive.
Once you get the vision, once you begin to find the location, and no doubt you probably have to have a fairly full sense of what this project is, do you begin to surround yourself with different people that can help project that vision that you have, or surround yourself with people that bring their own elements into it as well?
Oh, it's such a marriage in that sense, because you need both. Are you talking about on both the filmmaking side, on the production side, and on the life model side?
Yeah, and especially on the production side, because you're working with sound and color and makeup and, all of that.
But you do have to pick like-minded people. So, for example, if it's the sound recordist, he has to or she has to be excited by what it's like to film in a hardscrabble location and then record that gravel sound with a certain kind of ardor. The costume designer can't come in with some assumption and say, well, I'm going to just put them all in, camo. You have to find out if it's mossy oak. Right. You have to look. And she did a great job. She asked people to switch with her. Can I have your Carhartt that's been used for 10 years that's really got threads and stains? And I'll give you this new one that we were going to distress anyhow. You can use the new one. The production benefits from the old one because it has a story, it has life, it has sweat and toil in it,
Yeah.
So in that sense, that costume designer had to want to work that way. Yeah. She had to want to be inspired by what the local people in that, as you say, that 3-mile radius were really wearing.
Sure. Well, we have about a minute left, but that story you told, I know it struck so many people as it was so specific. It picked out a pocket of the population that normally didn't have that voice. Is it hard to find a project to match that as you look forward? A story as specific as that?
Oh, it is. It is, especially one that where the author had done such a tight job, actually plotting it and getting it to gel. And yet, there are a lot of untold stories.
Yes.
And the big thing is to have people that want to actually work with you tell them.
Yes. Well, Deborah Granick she's co-wrote and directed Winter's Bone. Deborah, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
And she will be headlining Spalding University's Festival of Contemporary Writing. That will be at Spalding University Auditorium, 824 South 4th Street. That's 6:30 p.m. tonight. The event is free, ticketless, and open to the public. This is Here and Now.